Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee, and control operator for the Limar Technical Net. And welcome to the Silver Edition of this year of the Limar Technical Net. I will remind everyone of the usual thing that if you cannot get onto the radio itself and you would like to pass on either a question or a topic that you would like to hear discussed or share a puzzle, we are always interested in puzzles. Or if you want me to tap a fool on the shoulder and ask them to take a look at a space-related or math-related news item or YouTube video or what have you, the email address to reach me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. I have available link pages if we have time. We may have time tonight because we're not going to have Andy's Corner, unfortunately, because of the holidays. But if we don't get to articles in the Science Talk segment, I have links to the original articles, and you can review them at your leisure. In addition, there are some fascinating YouTube that I have come across. I have in the past discussed how Stephen Hawking was a brilliant scientist, a Nobel Prize winner, but he cut some corners some places, and he had this popular book that he kept republishing in which he tried to explain his famous Hawking's radiation. He didn't really explain it. He made up a kind of a fairy tale for people who didn't quite understand stuff because he didn't think that they would figure it out. And so he sort of made up a fable, and it's been repeated all over the internet, and it makes no sense. I put a link to a YouTube video of a physicist who was able to kind of reasonably well explain Hawking's original concept of what Hawking's radiation is. And I've added a few other YouTube videos from the same gentleman about how gravity is due to time dilation and a lot of very interesting quantum mechanical sort of things. So I hope you'll enjoy that as well. Let me drop for a sec. Also, as I often mention, we have a chat room. You can either go to Limar's website and find the link there and type that, or you could just go into your browser and type chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. I stream audio of W2VL, usually almost 24/7. So if you don't have a radio or if you have a friend who's out of the area and can't do Echolink for whatever reason, you can tell them to just type into their browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you an audio feed. And I always like to remind people, Mike, AC2NJI, has a great archive of past technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. And that's available at his website, which is amateurradio.tv. So please avail yourself of it. You know, since 2006, TechNet episodes manned by great man Dick K2RIW, with people like Eric and John and Mel, and brilliant guys who unfortunately have all become silent keys. So their knowledge has not ceased to exist. It's been passed on to other people, and it still lives within the archive that Mike maintains. So please check it out when you have nothing better to do. It's full of excellent, excellent information. Let me drop once more, and I will tell you my planned schedule for tonight. Okay, as I mentioned before, unfortunately, Andy, WA2CDL, because of the religious holidays, will not be able to join us with another episode of Andy's Corner. We look forward to him returning soon. So I will ask the audience if they have any questions or topics of a technical nature. I will take down their first name and their call sign, and we will try to address their question in order. I hope we have a few people, and if you have more than one question, that's all right as well. We pretty much have to fill a lot more time tonight because Andy's not here. We're going to try and stretch that until about 10:15 or so. In addition to technical questions, later on we'll ask if anyone has any general science and or general medical questions, and also we'll try out a couple of puzzles on you and see if you have fun with that. So I have a whole bunch of stuff, and I have a bunch of articles of a scientific nature that I think might be interesting to hear about. It's about 10:15 or so. I will call upon Paul, WS2N, to do the SpaceNet report. That'll take us to approximately 11 o'clock, and we'll put a bow on it, wish you well, and call it a night. So that's the plan. Hopefully, the repeater and other variables in the universe will allow us to accomplish this. So, once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee. And does anyone have any questions of a technical nature or topics tonight? Please give me your call sign and your first name.
Good. My call letter is on KD2BAW. Reporting to that.
KD2NFJ, name is Sam. How are you, Roy?
I'm fine, Sam. Do you have a question or a topic or a comment for tonight?
Yeah, I just said that. Yeah, I have a question.
Okay, very good. Rob and Sam, recognize anyone else want to put their name down, please? Just give me your first name and your call sign.
Good. Hello, Charles 2, Delta Alpha, which is important to that.
Okay, very good, Wayne. I'm looking forward to hearing good news. Anyone else want to put their name down for tonight's technical net? Give me your first name and your call sign.
Yep, N2, Mike Bravo, N2MB, Clemson, South Carolina, my new home, supporting the net. It's good to hear you guys.
Well, thank you very much, Barry, and I hope things are well, and I wish you well, and keep checking into the technical net here. Anyone else want to put their name down and their call sign who have any kind of questions or topics or comments for the technical net?
Whiskey 2 Bravo Zero.
Rich recognized, so we'll try one more time. Anyone else with any questions or comments for the technical net tonight? Just give me your first name and your call sign. I'm afraid that was about 80-90% noise. If you could move your antenna around a little bit or kick up the gain in some other way, I'd appreciate it. Okay, not sure. Is that Curtis, the AW?
Roger.
Hey, Curtis, I assume you were just checking in and then supporting the net?
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much, Curtis. Well, let's get to the list, and hopefully by the time we get to the bottom of it, we'll have a few new people with new questions, or some of the people will have a second question. So, Rob, you're up first. What's the question for tonight?
Hey, well, good evening, Roy. This is Russ, KD2UQK. I'm out east a little bit going into the plains of your repeater. Can you hear me okay before I go on?
Yeah, you're full quieting.
Oh, that's good to hear. Thank you very much. So my question was posing on VOIP meetings for repeaters. There's a couple other clubs around that do it here with All-Star, and it seems they someone teamed up very quickly with the person from after. So I'm kind of wondering what is the best way, whether it be RF linking or IRLP or some other, you know, maybe echo link, I don't really know. I was interested in your thoughts on that, Roy. Some clubs can do it very well, have they linked, and some just really do traffic. I'm also interested in how Weimark does it, because it seems to be pretty seamless between W2PF and Q-repeater out. I'm just interested in your thoughts on that.
Okay, I wish, well, we do have a couple of people who are involved in our, in setting up things for our own repeater. We use a series of different connections. The connection that I'm using now, because I can't quite get into the Glen Oak, is purely through but I'm told that there is also a radio frequency link that is used. There's also a voter system that used to be used. So it's a conglomeration of a bunch of different things. In my experience, Echolink seems to be the weakest link. It seems easier to screw up Echolink than almost any other voice over internet protocol. You can set the levels off, which is very common. It's very easy to lock people out with Echolink. We have a gentleman from Philadelphia, Frank, who often is on the technical net towards the latter half of it. And unfortunately, if there's any signal going on any of the repeaters, he can't transmit any kind of a signal. So it somewhat depends upon the technology, although all the voice over internet protocols are based on fundamentally the same type of principle. It's how they actually accomplish it and how well designed and adjusted the input and the output levels are for any of these things. It's very easy to overdrive the computer that's running the voice over internet protocol and producing a lot of clipping and noise and problems, and timeouts as well introduce a problem. So my gut feeling, and I might be totally wrong because it's not like I'm the guy who runs these things from the repeater, but the IRLP seems to be better at it than Echolink, although they're kind of different, designed for different purposes. So IRLP is primarily designed for linkages of repeater to repeater, so probably that's why it's a little bit more bulletproof, whereas Echolink is primarily designed for individual to repeater. So that's the gist as far as I understand it. If anyone out there has a better experience with all the linking methods, and especially the voice over internet protocol, please hit that push to talk and give me a call sign.
WB2QGZ.
Yes, QZ.
Take it easy, name is Bill. And so I kind of wrangle a lot of the Great South Bay stuff. And I kind of know where this is coming from, I think. So All-Star is similar to IRLP. Both of them have, I think All-Star has a little bit more flexibility, but it's a similar system. You dial up a distant repeater and you link them together. So the best way, in my opinion, that you can go back and forth and link two repeaters is a full duplex link between them. Next best would be a half duplex link or a link. In other words, one side keys and the other side listens. but that depends on the person at the receiver of that link, not Quick Key. So everything pretty much depends on having a little bit of patience with the push-to-talk, even with a full duplex link. Now, you may not cause repeaters to drop off of the, or stop your, may not cause your conversation to drop off of link repeaters, but you're still going to double probably. So the key with a lot of this stuff, and even in some of the DMR, when it's up on a link system, if you quick key, the distant repeaters will end up missing some of your transmissions. So, you know, patience is kind of the key here. But, you know, a full duplex interlink between the repeaters is probably the best. A half duplex link is probably next best, and then your assortment of internet linking protocols of all types.
Okay, thanks a lot. It's my understanding you can't really set those different settings. Just for the people out there who haven't had much experience, they seem to me to be competing almost identical methods. I mean, they're both voice over internet protocol. They're both linking, for the most part, repeater to repeater. You can buy a small server and use it personally, but their raison d'etre, at least for IRLP, a little bit more than All-Star, is to establish repeater-to-repeater link. Whereas EchoLink is kind of designed, as I mentioned before, primarily for the individual to get to the repeater. And you can jump over the internet to the other side of the...
So, EchoLink is, as you mentioned, pretty much designed for a... you know, computer or phone into a distant repeater. I guess the difference between EchoLink and, IRLP and All-Star. So All-Star is based on the asterisk PBX, I guess, open source protocol. So you have a little bit more flexibility there. It really looks at everything as phone extensions. And you can do all kinds of things with them on the fly, perhaps a little more conveniently than IRLP. But I think that's the key difference, is the All-Star is on that asterisk PBX open source.
Okay, very good. But, I don't think I've ever heard of any repeaters that were linked through both methods. I get the sense that All-Star prefers people to stay linked to All-Star, and I don't know if IRLP mentions it one way or another, but I've seen one or the other. I've never seen both. Do you know of any repeaters that happen to have links to both modes?
Yeah, so there's at least one that I'm familiar with that supports both All-Star and IRLP. Kind of like EchoLink doesn't want non-EchoLink things, and I think to some extent IRLP doesn't want non-IRLP things. However, it's possible to have both of them exist in... although it's not active now, at one point we were supporting both EchoLink and IRLP on one repeater, and you just dialed a different code, and whichever one was in use was in use. But All-Star, I know you can do All-Star and IRLP on one machine, and that at least works. It may be too, IRLP folks may not dig that, but you can. How's that?
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. I know... generally speaking, if you talk to the guys who run Echolink, they have this curious dislike of people who use it to simply listen into a repeater. They really kind of reinforce the concept that it's designed not for broadcasting, it's designed for transmitting and receiving and having conversations. So have you ever happened upon those types of sentiments for Echolink people?
On some repeaters, yes. Some people don't like IRLP. In other words, that's really more of a repeater owner thing. I don't want somebody connected just to gawk. If you're not going to talk, you know, let it go for somebody else. The one thing I neglected to mention about All-Star is you can have DID dialing, regular end-to-end telephone dialing into the network. It supports that. So if you have an account, you can dial an area code and a seven-digit number. And that's the same as being a client anywhere else. You can dial into any repeater from that. You can run a telephone app, which allows you to connect to anything similar to Echolink. That functionality really doesn't exist in IRLP. So that's another advantage for All-Star, is you have a lot of non-radio options to get into it.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, it probably goes back to it being a fork of Asterisk. So that's fascinating. I don't think they particularly promote that terribly, because I was looking into that subject a couple of years ago, and I don't recall seeing it. But thanks. That's a lot of good information. Rob, did you have your question answered by now?
Yes, Roy, that was fantastic. Thank you. QGZ, thank you. I actually always listen to your repeater for the Great South Bay when I'm over in Nassau. Thank you very, very, very much for chiming in. Yeah, that answered my question, Roy. I was just curious because, you know, when you listen to the Limark repeaters between W2VL and KPQ out east a little bit, it's pretty much seamless, you know. Sometimes it gets a little hairy. I've heard on All-Star connected repeaters specifically, where if you don't wait for the courtesy tone, you quick key, only the one repeater you feed up on hears it. But I guess that's just a patience thing with that type of linking. So thank you, Roy. I do appreciate it. KD2 UQK Mobile.
Okay, very good, Rob. Thanks for participating. Sam, what's your question for tonight?
Okay, Roy, an antenna problem. I got a backup antenna, so I got both antennas. I was talking to them the other day, and Richie told me I was fading out or I was on a crackling, but I could receive. And he said, you know, when I'm talking, it's really bad. So I'm on the good one now. You're still with me, right?
Yeah, I'm still with you, Sam. I hear you well.
Okay, it's a slip, Jim, that's giving me a problem. I'm talking on the good one. Now I'm going to switch over just to switch. I'm going to count to 10. And when I get to 3, I'll switch over. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yes, that was a significant lessening of your signal. You went from full quieting to about 50-60% noise in your background. So it could be a bunch of different things. It could be as simple as it being mistuned. If it's mistuned, you're going to get a lot of reflection back. The reflection back will probably trigger your radio's foldover circuit, so the output will drop. And that could wreck your signal because you're just having a lower than normal output through a mismatch that's losing a lot through reflection. Or there could be something wrong with the general efficiency of the antenna where it's simply not radiating efficiently for some other reason. Receiving antennas are much more forgiving because the front end of a receiver is much more forgiving. You can establish a very, very poor standing wave ratio. You could have easily a 5-to-1 and the front end will still suffer through and give you a somewhat decent signal. But if you try to transmit through it, you get the problem that I just mentioned. It reflects back, it folds down the power, and it doesn't work very well for you. So my big question is, do you happen to have a standing wave ratio meter and a watt meter hooked up in line with your rig? That would give you a lot of information.
Yeah, I bought one on YouTube, but it worked a couple of days and it went. You know, I couldn't have did that. I could have bought a brand new one. So I'm in the process of buying a brand new one. But Roy, how did it sound to you? Was it crackly or what?
Sense of your signal rather than your Zolta tone, just a bunch of noise crackling away in the background. You know, as the signal strength gets less and less, the percentage of noise goes up and audio goes down, and eventually all one will hear is the noise, and anything lower than that, you won't even be able to capture the receiver of the repeater. And so, you know, no signal will go out at all. So that's usually how signal drops are represented on a repeater. So you had a lot less power to the receiver when you switched over to your alternate setup.
Thank you, Roy. Yeah, it wasn't expensive. It's been a year since I've had it. It's just flimsy. It looks like a belt. And it was only $26. And it worked all the way up until now. So maybe it just gave out. I'm gonna stay on this one up on now. It's a 4-meter band antenna. It's really good. But my J2 has 4 bands. 6 bands. 2-meter and 40. So this is a good antenna. So I'll check it out. Maybe there's nothing I can do. I'm not going to play with it, but it only cost me $25.6. So it's better if I buy a brand new one, a real good one. But I just wanted to know why you can 15 and you can't dress it on the same, you know, kind of voice tone. But thank you. You explained it good. I'm going to stay on this one till I get a new one. Thank you, too, and that's it.
AC2GS. Okay, Sam, I wish you good luck. Yeah, it's always good to have more than one antenna, because the day inevitably comes when that one antenna isn't quite working right, and it's always nice to be able to twirl a dial or unplug a cable and replug it and be back on the air after very little delay. So look around, see something that fits your price point, and try and get it as high as you can. The secret with UHF and VHF antennas, as the old joke goes, is the three most important factors is height. So the higher you can raise it up, the much more effective it will be for you. But I wish you good luck, Sam, as always.
Okay, thank you, Roy.
Okay, that takes us now to Wayne, KD2UDU. How's your transceiver doing these days?
Boy, I spoke to Andy a few hours ago. As you know, I think I told you I brought it over to Andy's, and we went through it, and he found some issues. The number one issue, it was blowing the 10 amp fuses, and he found that the one of the final tubes had a crack in it, and it had let air in and basically burnt out the tube, and he felt that that was blowing the 10 amp power supply fuse. And the funny thing was that I had opened up the whole radio before I ever powered it up. And I had noticed on one tube it had a whitish coating on one side of the tube. But, you know, I'm a novice at this. I'm still learning every day. And Andy informed me that when it turns white like that, it means there's a an air leakage in the tube. In addition to that, he found there was a transistor adjacent to that coil. You remember the coil that I finally figured out the value, and I replaced the coil. And when I had the board apart, I noticed the bottom of the board looked like it had overheated, so I ordered this. There was two transistors side by side in the AF board. And it turns out one of them really was bad. Andy tested it, and I had brought over all the parts to him, so he replaced that transistor. Two other things. The speaker in the power supply, which is the only speaker in the unit, apparently was also blown because it was connected to that same coil that overheated. That was the speaker circuit. And the on-off switch, which he said, I still have volume control, but it's for some reason the on-off switch doesn't work, and we're going to to find some solution to that. But it looks like I will be getting the radio back soon. My hope. You know, Andy's going to replace the both the final tube and the speaker, and you know, any other various things that might that he might stumble on.
AC2GS. One thing that this purchase has gotten you is a kind of short education in troubleshooting and the repair of vintage radios. I think when you were mentioning the white material, there's something in a lot of vacuum tubes that are called the getters. They're usually made out of something like barium metal, and what they are is they sit inside the vacuum tube, and if gases get expressed inside, they trap them and allow the vacuum tube to still operate. Obviously, if there's a crack in the glass, it just keeps on filling up with atmosphere, so the getter just kind of oxidizes. That's probably what's turning white. That's a telltale that your tube has gone really bad. So, you know, again, not only in the end of this exercise, hopefully, will you have a functioning radio show, but you will have a better sense of troubleshooting, which is good.
I can't agree more, Roy. I've learned a lot. I'm continuing to learn. I bought a lot of tools. I bought, you know, soldering station and other various tools. And Andy explained it exactly the way you did it. That's about the getter. I just, you know, it's unfortunate that I didn't realize that at first. Apparently, it was working all along. I didn't hear anything before it blew the fuses, that is. I didn't hear anything on receive because the speaker was blown also. You know, but it's been a learning experience, as you said, and that's kind of what I wanted. I didn't want to just, you know, get my tickets and buy a radio and you know, get on the air without any pain, so to speak. You know, a lot of the old-timers built their own radios, and I kind of feel obligated to at least try something along those lines.
Okay, very good. You're a guy who likes a challenge. Most people don't. I recall way back there was a gentleman who came on the technical net, and he took his credit card and purchased the radio and plugged it into the wall and turned it on, and it worked. And he was kind of annoyed that he was called an amateur. I think he wanted a professional rating thanks to his credit card. So, you know, some people want challenges and some people don't. So it's a big world, and you certainly got yourself something that's very challenging. You know, that radio had multi-system failures, you know, something that's usually mentioned in medicine more than radio equipment. But a lot of things were kind of blinky. So I'm glad that they're all getting better, and I hope you'll be using it very soon. And once again, I hope to hear you on 10 meters.
I hope to be on 10 meters. Unfortunately, I keep forgetting to jump on on Sunday morning. Sorry about that, Roy, but you will hear me at some point. You definitely will. Anyway, thanks. This is KD2UDU.
Okay, very good, Wayne. Good luck, and please. And tell us how it's working out, especially when you're back to using your little transceiver there.
Yes. Unfortunately, it doesn't have 2 meters, but I built a 921 unun for it today because I plan on using a NFED long wire when I get it back. So hopefully you will hear me on HF at some point.
Okay, I look forward to it, Wayne. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limar Technical Mess. Next on my list is Rich W2BZ. What's your question or your topic for tonight, Rich?
Hello, Roy. Hello, everybody. First of all, I'm just using a rubber ducky into Selden, so I hope you can hear me okay. This isn't what I was going to ask, but the gentleman from the South Bay who was coming in full quieting had a beautiful signal, as did you, for about 3 minutes of your CUSO with him. You or him, I couldn't think out which one. I could still hear you way, way deep in the noise, but for 3 minutes it was just that, and then all of a sudden it came back, both of you with great signals. Do you know what happened? Go ahead.
No, not a clue, unless we were doubling with each other. It's kind of difficult to tell, unfortunately. Although I can visualize the signal, it's only from one of the three repeaters involved in this strange little connection that we have. I transmit to Plainview using UHF. It's linked to the IRLP to Selden. And then Selden is linked, I think, through RF to Glen Oak. So there's a whole bunch of different places that can make or break a decent transmission.
I heard it also, Roy. I just assumed somebody inadvertently dead key, and then it went away.
Yeah, it's quite possible that someone was doubling. Either maliciously or accidentally. That's the most likely reason behind something like that.
Comment?
Yes, please, comment.
Good evening. This is KD2KNH, Charlie. I had interference and still do on 850 from the Westcon net, Connecticut, so you may be hearing that.
Oh, okay, that's a possibility. Anyway, what's your principal question?
And usually when you double, you just hear, you know, like a scrambled, like, type signal, but I could still hear one of the two people talk. I couldn't think out which one it was. Go ahead.
Well, again, it's very possible that someone was throwing out a dead carrier, and that pretty much muffled everything. It's, you know, doubling, but instead of two people, you're hearing a blank FM signal, and the other person just drops down in amplitude. So, again, most likely what was going on is just someone doubled. Whether, again, it was a malicious double or an accidental double, we'll never quite know.
I just on purpose threw out a dead carrier for about 4 or 5 seconds, and I wonder if anybody heard Roy just completely drop out. Go ahead.
Well, I'll ask the audience, since I certainly couldn't perceive it. Anyone hear any difference? You know, sometimes you have to have a strong signal into the repeater to block the other signals. But did anyone hear any diminution of my transmission during Rich's experiment?
Yeah, I did. I thought you had dropped the mic.
I assume someone responded, but it was all noise to me.
Sam said he did speak to an MK, but he heard a difference. He thought he dropped the mic.
The original one, or Rich wanted to do a little experiment, and very recently he just put down his guitar in order to reproduce that experiment. So is it the first time you're alluding to, or the last time?
Well, it was both. The first time I couldn't make out what you were saying. The second time I heard you clearly, but with just a diminished signal. Anyway, I'm on the HT right now, so I'm going to be listening for the rest of the program.
Okay, very much. So, Rich, your experiment was a success. You could reproduce that type of signal by doubling.
By doubling or by dead carriers.
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's doubling. It's doubling with a dead carrier, but it's doubling. I'm transmitting, you're transmitting, so it's double. Okay, the last person who transmitted was all noise to me.
P2STP.
Yes, Chris.
Hey, Roy, how you doing? That person I think you said was all noise to you. I think that's the station that's interfering with you a little bit, and I think it's coming from Connecticut. It's just crosstalk from somewhere.
Fortunately, do happen. It's never a sure thing with repeaters these days. So hopefully that guy will finish up his conversation or whatever he's having and not trouble us too much. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and K2STP, just one more comment to Rich that was asking the question. You said you were using a rubber ducky tonight when concerned about your sound. I can tell you, I'm also on, I think you're on the Seldon repeater. I'm on the Seldon repeater. And you sound better tonight than I've ever heard you with that rubber ducky. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, Chris, you're basically full quieting. Rich has a very, very, it sounds like it's raining outside, which, you know, the weather could be that way. So it's either rain or it's a very, very mild background of noise that's not quite full quieting, but very close to it. And I think last Sunday as well, you had a good signal on your rubber ducky. So, what can I tell you? Sometimes these things work. Rubber duckies, I did an article for the newsletter on rubber duckies. It's rather sad to see what they're really going on inside them, but, you know, sometimes they work. What the heck?
This one's about an 18-inch. The Anytone that I have, the Anytone H68, that puts out 7 watts, but it is an extended, it is an extended rubber duck, and does a little better than the shortened one. The other question I was going to ask, I'm going to save for a later time, because it's more science question than it is a radio question. Something about what we talked about during the week, Roy. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, we may veer into the science segment any moment now. You were my last check-in. I'll ask if anyone else out there has any questions of a technical nature regarding radios, propagation, antennas, what have you. So if anyone has any questions, or even if they asked a question earlier and another question popped into their head, feel free to give me your first name and your call sign. Yes, Mike, what's your question for tonight?
My esteemed partner and friend, Mr. Hugh Wayne, and I would like to start getting into the quota. I'm looking at batteries. We have a group of serious people here. What do they suggest for portable batteries? The SLAs seem like they're a good, cheap choice, even though they're heavy. Double the price would be the BioNO Life Code. Has anybody made a lithium-ion pack? It's sort of weird. The SLA is cheaper.
Yes. Personally, I'm a big fan of the lithium iron phosphate design. That's the BioNO, and there are other companies, and also, if you tell them that you're a new customer or that you're an amateur radio operator, they usually will give you 10% off the top of your order, so keep that in mind. Lead acid, I wrote articles about that as well. Lead acid technology goes all the way back to the late 1800s. There have been improvements in design. The different variations, the gel and such, the sealed cell, but ultimately, for all intents and purposes, lead acid is lead acid. It's lead and sulfuric acid, and it has far stability. It really is not designed well for excessive a deep discharge. You can buy lead-acid batteries that are somewhat optimized for it, but it still takes a bit out of it. Also, when a rechargeable battery discharges, the voltage does not usually remain the same. It starts to drop down, and at a certain point, it becomes too low for most radios to deal with, and they kind of shut down as a safety feature. Lithium iron phosphate has a very nice long slope where it doesn't drop by too many volts. So you can discharge it to a greater degree than you can lead acid and still extract enough voltage potential to run most radios. Also, you can fully recharge it, supposedly, more than 3,000 times, where lead acid can't be recharged more than, I think, 500 or 600 times. It varies. It depends on the temperature. It depends upon the current load. There's a lot of variables with rechargeables. I don't know of anyone who's really put together a whole bunch of lithium iron, lithium ion or lithium polymer in order to have a separate battery. It's doable, but then you have to worry about some kind of cell balancing. The problem with multiple cells for lithium technology is that you need a specific type of a circuit so that you can distribute the charge throughout all the cells. If you don't have a circuit that adjusts for different qualities of the cells, you can have cells that run away and act as a short circuit and blow up your power supply. So that might be a problem if you... Okay, I didn't notice when I timed out. Let me just sum up the end. Lead acid is the cheapest, but lasts the least and has the most problems. So lithium iron phosphate has a much higher upfront cost, but if you amortize it over the lifespan, it's close to the same. I hope I didn't lose too much in the timeout.
No, you got your point across perfect. You timed out when you were talking about EMSs for lithium ion. So yeah, that was the second option. BioNO would have been a lithium ion with a BMS. I'm assuming the BioNO uses a BMS since it has just a charging port that comes out of it, similar to what I built on my skateboard. So I was just curious if anybody, the difference is that if you would use a 3S, 3P lithium ion, the voltage would be a perfect 12 at nominal. But again, yeah, I think that sort of answers it. Is there anybody out there that is using a lithium ion pack?
I guess not, Mike. I think generally, if you kind of took a vote, I think amateur radio operators, as I've kind of mentioned a few times, tend to be a wee bit tight with the money. So I think still, despite the technological benefits of lithium iron phosphate, I think a majority of people who are using batteries, luggable batteries usually are getting some variation on lead acid just because the upfront costs are significantly less.
Yeah, and then I'm starting out. I think all things point to the KX2 because a lot of people are just using a 3-18-650 cell holder with 3-18-650s in there, not attached to it. For now, I think the BioNO with the 10% is the place to go because I think it's fine, it'll pay for itself versus the double the weight of the SLA battery. Thank you.
WBTGXM.
You purchase them and you get a little experience, please feel free to come back and share that with us all. I have two lithium iron phosphate batteries. They both came from BioNO people. It's not like I really had any trouble with any of them, so I really didn't have to test their customer relations. But I got what I requested, what I ordered. I got that 10. Worked out for you as well.
A bunch too. So I'll give them a contact and I'll tell them my specs and just confirm that what I'm getting is going to work perfect. Thank you again, Roy.
You're welcome, Mike. If someone, if I doubled with someone, I'm sorry, but please give me your first name and your call sign.
W2ASC, Tony.
Yes, Tony. What can I do you for?
I was just walking in the house and I heard the comment from Mike about the BioNO. I have a couple of them and I've dealt with their customer service and I can't say anything but nice things about them. They're absolutely terrific, so highly recommend it. That's it.
Okay, very good, Tony. Yeah, I kind of get good vibes from them. They're one of those groups that shows up When there were hemp engines all over the place, they usually were there. Every time there was any event, it was an excuse to run a sale of that 10% off. And so they struck me as good people. I just, thankfully, the quality of their equipment, I got a charger from them as well when I first bought the two batteries, and they all work fine. So I've never had to avail myself of their customer relations, but I'm glad to hear that they do well with that as well. It's a good technology. It's not perfect. Battery technology is never going to be perfect. One of the slowest technological advances in electronics tends to be battery technology, because it's not really as much electronics as it is pure chemistry. Trying to get high energy density materials that are safe and don't tend to explode is problematic, and a lot of the times you'll hear about carbon nanotubes and buckies and all kinds of esoteric carbon-based material. There's a link to an article tonight about a certain supercapacitor based on a carbon material that the material scientists are working on. So batteries haven't gotten as good as it would be nice to. Elon Musk, who is an evangelist of all things technological, increased the energy of their batteries by basically increasing the volume of their batteries, which anyone can sort of do that. That doesn't really take new technology. If you just put more of the stuff in the battery, you get more capacity. So that's good to know. Anyone else with any comments about this or anything else that was mentioned before, please hit that button. I'm giving you first name and call sign.
KD2, UQK, follow-up question for batteries.
Yes, Rob.
Yeah, Roy, I just had a quick question. I think it qualifies the same sort of category. What defines whether it be a car battery or a boat battery, as deep cycle? Is that a lead-acid chemistry? Is it a gel chemistry? I always heard it was a distinction that they could be discharged, whether it be, 40%, 50%, as to where a regular car battery could only go down to, 80% before it's unusable. What is the difference between a deep cycle battery and a regular car battery, for instance?
Well, I mean, the basic underlying chemistry is identical. It's carbon rod and lead and sulfuric acid. I think it's the purity and grade of the electrodes the problem with lead acid is it gets something called sulfonation, where sulfur compounds clog up the electrodes and block the ability of them to recharge. So I think that it's a tweak of the chemistry to allow a greater degree of discharge. A normal old-style 100-year-old lead-acid battery, if you fully discharged it, lots of luck, it would never be the same again. And to a lesser extent, as far as I'm aware, even deep discharge is a relative term. It's never a good practice to discharge 100% even a deep discharge battery. If anyone else out there has a better understanding of the lead-acid chemistry in a deep discharge, please feel free to hit that button.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, I understood that they were just very well built. The electrodes weren't as close to one another near the bottom, where sometimes it created a problem. They kept it a little higher off the bottom, and they do last longer. These marine type batteries. I had trouble with a truck many years ago, and it was always constantly, having eye on me. And usually you could last about 6 or 7 times fully discharged before you start having problems. So deep discharge battery, and that thing like lasted forever. I don't know. I got rid of the truck. It had to be 10 years. The thing was still going, and I always had problems with that battery. And of course, they use them in the recreation vehicles too, RVs. They're really good. So there's a big difference. Of course, you're going to pay more money back to you, Bert.
Yeah, but as you mentioned, the chemistry is really just the same, and other aspects, the limitations,